The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Sorry, this sense of Dharma talks, they're a little bit more, it's kind of a little bit of a realization or something. The Dharma talks, they're a little more like some weird species of performance art than maybe I've realized. And they're less a kind of transmission of information or something like that. And so I say that just so that we can take it, whatever impression it makes on our mind, whatever's useful, we pick up, we leave the rest behind. So yesterday I spoke about certain kind of reverence for the pain of the other. And today it's about reverence for their goodness and their power. And it seems like it should be easy to open to the goodness of another, but it involves some measure of surrender. Maybe even idealization. That's not a word from our orbit, you know. Idealization gets a bad rap in many circles, and for good reason. There are problems, as I'll say. But that sense of, oh yeah, we're supposed to be objective and measured, but idealization has a place in relationships. It has a place in our relationship to Dhamma. And sometimes to be objective or measured is actually a lack of courage or a preoccupation with one's independence. And I know when I was younger, there were definitely relationships where I sort of like completely leapfrogged the idealizing honeymoon phase and directly entered a kind of state of vaguely disgruntled ambivalence. You know, most people live for the honeymoon, right? But that leapfrogging, yeah, that kind of hesitation around a certain kind of heart surrender, that was not a function of wisdom nor of equanimity, but something more like fear, you know. This psychoanalyst, Stephen Mitchell, idealization is destabilizing. It shifts our values, our priorities, our purposes. It undermines the utilitarian approach to practical realities that our lives require most of the time. Falling is not a viable way of life. And so we tell ourselves that the transition from falling in love to being in love represents a dispelling of fantasy, a landing on solid ground. We try to keep our footing sure by degrading idealization into mere intoxicating illusion. We are wiser and know better now. However, it is not at all clear that the solid ground we perpetually seek is any more real than the idealizations that inspire passion. Wallace Stephen said that something like disillusionment is sometimes merely another illusion. Now, of course, I'm not talking about surrendering to someone or something that who lack exquisite care, sensitivity for your heart. And idealization gets problematic when we're kind of using it to prop ourselves up, or it's problematic when we're projecting all of our needs onto the other or trying to extract their power. What I'm really talking about is reverence. Reverence. How do we relate to the power of another? Do we lose ourselves in their power? Do we cling tenaciously to our autonomy? And how do we surrender to Dhamma? Yeah. We don't ask it on the first day, but at some point we're going to have to surrender. We're going to have to let go of a certain kind of willfulness and autonomy. Offer our heart up to Dhamma. And we fall in love with the path, we stay in love with the path, we grow disenchanted with it, and we fall in love again. And our relationship with the path, our relationship with others is supported by something like episodes of idealization. For our heart to lean with a certain kind of reverence. Now, I'm not temperamentally a kind of devotional person, but now when I see goodness, I know to get on my knees. Yeah. As we grow to love ourselves more deeply, as we grow to understand, to appreciate the emptiness of self more fully, the kind of reverence for goodness that feels more and more natural. It feels more and more like a sense of awe, a sense of awe, awe in the face of goodness. We look up at the night sky, we see stars light years away, and we sense the vastness of space and time. And in some ways we feel small, yet sanctified, holy. And that sense of awe, you know, it's easy to feel for the Dalai Lama or something like this. These kinds of people, these beings. But I feel like we can actually sense some of that awe, that reverence for goodness in for all the ordinary people in our lives too. Yeah, maybe it's just some little thing they do. Some awe. That's beautiful. We're not relating ego to ego, when it's ego to ego, the power or the goodness of another can spark envy or self-judgment, comparison, competitiveness. What I'm talking about, we're not using the other's goodness as a kind of measuring stick for ourselves. That's the ego to ego competitiveness. Yeah. And that is the wellspring of a lot of pain, envy. Yeah. Of the seven deadly sins, lust, gluttony, greed, laziness, wrath, pride, and envy. The writer Joseph Epstein said, of the seven deadly sins, only envy is no fun at all. Yeah. It's really no fun. But is that how we get lost in the power, the goodness, the potency of another? And so the encouragement of metta practice is to see goodness, to see it. Yeah, to be here, to kind of be open to idealization. Yeah, maybe just a moment of just such reverence. To feel it, to take it in when we see it. We're learning to find our self-sufficiency, and we're also very much practicing dependency, I feel. We're practicing the strength of surrender, the strength of surrender. So I offer this for your consideration. So, we'll gather again if you like this evening. There's the page for the Zoom call this evening at Pacific time at 7 o'clock, and time to sit and have some dialogue and. And I'll be back tomorrow morning. And Gil and the crew is having their in-person retreat and at IRC. And so anyway, I'm happy to be with you all. And I'll see you this evening or tomorrow, same place. Okay, thank you.